Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Nemhauser, and it is not as nice of a Tuesday morning here in the Pacific Northwest. The showers have returned, so hopefully they will be brief, but you know, it's looking like the typical spring here in Seattle. You get a little sun and then you get a little rain, and we'll just push on through. I hope everybody had a wonderful Mother's Day this weekend. And I hope all the dads are getting ready for Father's Day coming up here in a few weeks. In our household, this is a very busy time of year because my wife's birthday is the beginning of May. And then Mother's Day is the next weekend. And then my parents both have birthdays at the end of May. And then I have a birthday in June. And then Father's Day is, I think, the week after. Or the week before, I can never remember. Then our wedding anniversary is the end of June. It is a very celebratory couple of months. It's also like, it's kind of like a kid that has their birthday on Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever, you know, holiday you celebrate. And, you know, you kind of feel like you don't quite get the full goodness of a singular birthday when it's kind of stuck around some of these other holidays, and you get a little bit of fatigue from all the celebrating. But it is a cool time of the year nonetheless, getting warmer overall, and we are just 24 hours away really from the NFL schedule being announced for 2025. We know the opponents for the Seahawks. We do not know when they will play those opponents, what order. We don't know whether they will be primetime games or not, but we will find out very shortly. And part of what I'm going to share with you all today is I sat down with my good pal AI and fed it 10 years of NFL schedule data. I asked it to look for patterns about, you know, road games, primetime games, bye weeks, all those kinds of things to see how the NFL does it. Try to reverse engineer it a little bit. I gave it the 2025 Seahawks opponents. I gave it the known games that are already essentially predicted. And if you guys don't know, like, there's these sites that do these prediction grids. In fact, I'll show you one of these. Why not? You know, I will show you this guy. Yeah, sure. And these are relatively accurate in my experience with leaked parts of the schedule. So you can see here, you know, it's got already some things filled in for some teams where you've got the Jets playing home against Denver in what was that, week 6. And it's got some of these games that are TBD away games, like Baltimore is going to be away in week 1. So is Cincinnati. So they won't be playing each other in week 1. They also won't be playing Pittsburgh, who's away. So it has some of this data. If you're curious, for the Seahawks, it does have some data. It says the Seahawks are going to be away in week 2 and week 4. Okay. And it also has some of this data for some of the Seahawks opponents. When Atlanta's playing Indianapolis, it knows when the Rams, the international games have been announced. If you did not know this, the international games have been announced. The Seahawks will not have an international game this year. I think that makes it highly likely they will have an international game next year. I've got my eye on the Australia game. I wouldn't be surprised if the Seahawks and Rams are playing in Australia next year. But as far as international games go, there is going to be the one game that hasn't fully been announced yet, I think, is the away game against the Chargers in Brazil. But maybe that's come out. The Vikings will indeed play back-to-back international games, the first team to ever do that. They will play against the Steelers. So they've taken the Dublin game. They will play against the Browns in London. And then the Broncos will play against the Jets in London. The Rams will play against the Jags. That was the other potential for the Seahawks to be an international game. So they'll play against the Jags in London. The Falcons will play against the Colts in Berlin. And the Commanders will play the first game ever in Madrid against the Miami Dolphins. So you've got some of this schedule data already out there, kind of predicting where things are going to be, who's going to play what. And I gave all this to my good friend AI to use that plus all the other things to predict schedules. I'm going to share two different possible schedules that we came up with together, because I don't know about you, but AI, in my experience, makes a lot of mistakes and does some really silly things. So as cool as it is as a technology to play with and use, I find myself like having to make really basic like changes to it over time. And one of the things, it would have a Thursday night football game before a bye week. And it's like, no, the NFL doesn't do that. And it would have alternating home away. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works. Like, you don't get to get away with it that easily. Now, you may not know this. You probably do not know this, but I think it's like an uncle or a cousin. His name's George Nemhauser. And he worked, I think, for Georgia Tech University for many years. He was like a mathematic genius, like super, super smart professor of, I think, math, or I don't know what he was. But in any event, he has worked with professional sports leagues, including Major League Baseball, a little bit with the NFL, on the algorithms and math that they use to help generate these schedules. It's super complicated. It's actually like, it's really impressive what they have to do to consider all the different factors and get these games scheduled in terms of, you know, think about all the events outside of the NFL that are at these stadiums and, which teams have played on, you know, Christmas, which is now a new thing, which teams played internationally, how much rest they need, like all this stuff. It is very, very complicated, much more complicated than you'd think it would be. We decided to make it much simpler. So I worked with AI on this. And the other thing, I don't know if you guys have this as well, but I feel, this is like, I don't know what this says about me, but I end up feeling really bad after like telling AI to do something over again for like the 10th time. I feel like I'm asking someone to do work. I don't know what it is, but I feel bad. I'm like, oh my God, I need you to do that again. No, I didn't like that. Do this. I'm not a bossy guy. My employees might've felt differently, but I don't like asking, you know, for things. So let's get into it. Let's share what I've got here. We're going to start with the first schedule that we came up with. And let's see if I can give you a little bit of a view. I'm going to zoom in. Can I zoom in any farther? I think I'm zoomed in as far as it'll go. All right. So here, without further ado, is the first part of the Seahawks schedule for 2025. In this first version of the schedule, we start with a home game against Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals. All right. Sunday game, normal Sunday game. And it's a two-game homestand to start the season. So you get a divisional game in week one. I don't know how you guys feel about divisional games week one. If it's the Cardinals, I'm kind of okay with it. But generally, I'd rather division games not be your first game of the season. I don't think it's the best version of yourself, but it's also not usually the best version of the opposing team. I would rather play those a little bit later. But this is a totally plausible. It's happened many times that the Seahawks have opened at home against a divisional opponent. So Arizona Cardinals week one, second game of a two-game homestand to start the season against the Indianapolis Colts. So you welcome in Anthony Richardson and that Colts team in week two. I think that's a reasonably favorable opening start to a season. Then the Seahawks go on the road for what we are predicting as a Monday night football game against the San Francisco 49ers. And so you have two divisional games within your first 3 weeks. The Seahawks have had some decent fortune in past years of not having a bunch of divisional games early, kind of push those out a little bit more. And I think that that actually ends up being more representative of good quality divisional games when the teams have kind of found themselves a little bit more. But it is not abnormal to have, you know, some of those divisional games coming early. So at the 49ers on Monday night, week three, go back on the road on a short week. So they will have been at San Francisco, but it's a West Coast, you know, shorter road trip. But then they go back on the road to the Tennessee Titans in week four. And this is a game that I think a lot of us are rooting for. I'm going to be going to a lot of these games, almost all of them. And the Titan going to Tennessee in September would be nice. I think it would be fun to be there. I think a lot of the Real Hawk Talk crew is going to head to Tennessee. It's a really popular spot that a lot of people haven't a chance to go to. I've never been to Tennessee, never been to Nashville. So it would be fun to be there while it's still the weather's a little bit decent. So this would satisfy that week four against the Titans. And then, and for what it's worth, well, hold on a second. I think this is a good example of one of the many mistakes that AI makes. We know that week two is supposed to be an away game. So week two and week four. So they cannot open with a two-game homestand. This is already a bad prediction from my perspective. I can't keep telling AI. Maybe I'll have them regenerate one more time. But we'll take a look through the rest of this, and we'll look at the second option as well. All right, so we know that the Seahawks are going to be on the road week two and week four. If either of those are the Tennessee Titans, I think that would be great. Week five, the Seahawks come back home and they play the New Orleans Saints. You look at this, I mean, it's just such a different schedule than last year. When you're talking about the Colts, Titans, and Saints at any point in your schedule, it just feels very different than, you know, playing the Vikings, Packers, and Lions, you know, very, very different. So this is in the midst of a three road games in four week stretch at San Francisco, at Tennessee, home against New Orleans, then going back on the road to the Rams. And one of the things here that's interesting, this also would be the Seahawks would start with two of their three divisional opponents on the road. So that means that they would have their home games against their opponents, their divisional opponents, to close out the year, which I think is beneficial if that's the case. So they'd play at the Rams in week six. They would play at the Panthers in week seven. So another two-game road trip, but the benefit of kind of grouping it with a divisional road game is these are not long road trips. So it's not as much back-to-back East Coast road trips in this case. So at the Rams week six, at the Carolina Panthers in week seven, and then come home for a Thursday night. So a short week Thursday night game against the Houston Texans. That would be rough. That would be rough to have an East Coast trip, come home and face the a pretty good Texans team on a short week. Now, granted, they would also be playing on a short week, you'd assume. I don't know what their schedule would look like, but that would be, it's not out of the question for sure, but it would be rough. Week nine, they are, so this is a three-game homestand. They come home after Carolina. They play the Texans on Thursday night in week eight. Then they play the Tampa Bay Bucks in week nine. Then they play the Minnesota Vikings in week 10. So that's, you know, a nice stretch of home games for the Seahawks, should that be the case. And then they get a bye week. So three home games and then a bye week. That is pretty rare, but would allow the Seahawks to really settle in during this time of the year. Those are three tough games. Texans, Bucks, Vikings are all decent teams. We don't know how good the Vikings are going to be this year with J.J. McCarthy as their quarterback, but we know how good that defense is, and there's a lot of great skill position players. I don't think that game's going to be easy regardless. The Bucks were a playoff team last year and had a really good offense. We'll see if they can, you know, sustain that. Texans also were a playoff team last year and won a playoff game. So, you know, those are three tough games. I'd be curious in terms of, you know, which of these opponents are going to have really good fan representation. Like last year, you had a lot of teams that kind of took over the stadium, partially because they have very strong fan bases. I'm not sure how strong the Texans fan base is or the Bucks fan base is. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. They get the bye week in week 11. So a week 11 bye would be great. I think that's late in the season and it's kind of ideal. Then they have a lot of road games to finish. So they finish with five of their last seven games on the road. Keep in mind, the Seahawks play an extra road game this year. They played an extra home game last year. They play an extra road game this year. Also keep in mind, the Seahawks had a really good road record last year. For whatever that means this year. So after the bye week, they play against the Pittsburgh Steelers. This could be a Sunday night football game in December around Thanksgiving. And that would be the reunion, the DK Metcalf kind of reunion game for Seattle. Then they go back. So this would be back-to-back kind of East Coast-ish kind of trips to Pittsburgh in week 12 and then to the Atlanta Falcons in week 13. Benefit of playing the Falcons in December, this is in November, any time late in the year is that's an indoor stadium. So being able to play them late in the year would be advantageous. If they could play Atlanta later as opposed to earlier, that would be good. For that reason, less outdoor cold weather games. Then they'd come home after that two week road trip and they would play the San Francisco 49ers. Could be a Sunday night football game. This would be the beginning of the December slate. They'd then go on the road to the Commanders and then again on the road to Jacksonville. So two back-to-back East Coast road trips sandwiched between that, a 49ers home game. That would be a really rough stretch. Steelers, at Falcons, home 49ers, at Commanders, at the Jags. And we don't know what the Jags are going to be. They've been a joke of a team. I'm not a huge fan of Trevor Lawrence. We'll see if Liam Cohen can make more of him than anyone else has been able to make of him so far. If so, then the Jags could be a tough game. And it's certainly a long trip down to Florida from Seattle. It would be beneficial to play Jacksonville in the winter months. You know, great to go there and face them when it's going to be 70 degrees instead of, you know, going someplace else where it's going to be super cold, or playing them early where it's going to be 95 and humid. So that would be advantageous if they could do that. Then the Seahawks close with two divisional games. This is very typical. They play home against the Rams. This could be a Sunday night football game. And then away against the Cardinals. So other than the error that AI made on the second week should be an away game, I think that this schedule is plausible. This worked in my mind as things that could be. If you switch that Colts game with the 49ers game, like call that, like say that they start with the Cardinals at home and then they travel to the 49ers, that would work. And that would be the only change you'd have to make here. It could also be that you switch the Colts game, the home game with the Panthers potentially, or something like that. So anyway, there's a few different things that you could do just to simply switch this around. I think if this was the Seahawks schedule, I think I don't hate it. I like what I look at in schedules. When's the bye week? Too early of a bye week is really rough. So middle of the season bye weeks are great. I think the fact that they start with a little heavier emphasis at home and they start with a lot of their easier games, I would call the Colts, Titans, Saints, potentially the Panthers, some of their easier games on this schedule, I think is potentially good. I think playing at San Francisco early in the season, the Rams early, I think playing the San Francisco early is not great because, again, I'm expecting the 49ers to have injury issues. They're an old, aging team. I expect them to pick up more and more injuries as the year goes on and to be easier to beat later in the season than they're going to be earlier. So that's not ideal, but you know, I don't think that's going to make or break things. I think the fact that you get all the way to week 11 without really having difficult road trips. I mean, you've got the Rams and Panthers back to back in week 6 and 7, but I don't know. That generally speaking, that is a pretty easy start to the season. But man, this end, this end would be brutal. You know, going back to back Steelers and Falcons, depending on how you feel about the Falcons, I think the Falcons are going to be pretty good this year. Coming home for the 49ers, hopefully that would be an easier matchup at that point, but you can't assume anything with that team. Then the Commanders and Jaguars back to back. Don't know, like the Commanders could be a very different team this year, but I have so much respect for Jaden Daniels and what they were able to do on offense. That was a very, very good team that got to the NFC Championship last year. And then the Jags, as we said, don't know. Closing with the Rams and the Cardinals, especially the Rams at home, I think is good. Finishing at the Cardinals, how many times have the Seahawks ended a season at Arizona? It's happened quite a bit. So I think that's plausible, maybe even likely. So that's the first version of this schedule. Let's take a look at the second version, see if we did any better with the second version. All right. Let me pull up the second version. This is the alternative version. This one actually adheres to the week 2 and week 4 road games. All right, so this is the second version of the schedule. And in this one, we've got the Seahawks starting with a home game. I think if they have week 2 away game, if that's right, then I believe this, it seems very likely the Seahawks are going to start with a home game, which I always like for the Seahawks to start with a home game. This would be a week 1 game against the Houston Texans. How would you feel about that? part of me likes that. Like, I'd like to get a good team like the Texans traveling in the first week of the season where, you know, they would have to adjust. I think the Texans' offensive line is awful. And I think early on, the defense could be ahead of the offense and hold down CJ Stroud. And they're going to know the least about D'Amico Ryan's going to know the least about the Seahawks offense with Clint Kubiak and how it's going to look and what they have to worry about and how they're going to use Robbie Utes and how they're going to use Elijah Arroyo and how they're going to use, Kenneth Walker in this versus Zach Charbonnet. How does Cooper Kupp get used? Like, there's a lot of questions. And so I actually would really like the Seahawks opening up with, you know, the Texans at home. I think that'd be a good chance to maybe get that win if possible. And then they'd travel to Arizona in week two. I don't like this because I like it when Arizona games are late in the season on the road. I think all Seahawks fans do, because you get the good weather. You're looking to, anytime it's in December, you're looking to escape Seattle, and to go to Arizona is one of the most popular things to do. So in a way, Arizona game early in the season is the worst. Nobody likes that because you can get nice weather in Seattle. You don't need to go to Arizona in September. But plausible. You've got the 49ers again. They've got the 49ers early in the year. This is a home game against the 49ers instead of away. So you start at home. So two of your first three games are at home, and you have back-to-back divisional games. I kind of like the start of this schedule in some ways, as far as the opponents, setting aside personal preference about weather. And then, you know, it could be a Sunday night football game where the 49ers come up. So you'd learn a lot early on. Then you'd get to the Tennessee Titans away game. Again, kind of, it predicted that multiple times. So fingers crossed, that's actually what happens. But back-to-back road games, one against the Titans in week four, then the second, a Monday night game in Atlanta, in week five. And so the nice thing is you'd get an extra day between those road trips. Tennessee, you'd come home, then you'd have an extra day to recover before you went back on the road to play Atlanta. I don't hate this. I think having a potentially, quote, easier road game and then having a little extra time for a tougher road game and getting some of those road trips out of the way earlier isn't the worst thing. The Colts at home in week six and then an earlier bye week. Okay. So played around with an earlier bye week in week seven. I don't think week seven is the worst. If you're talking about week five, that's pretty bad. But week seven, not crazy. Coming off the bye, so you basically get this nice little grouping after the back-to-back road games against the Titans and the Falcons. You come home for the Colts, get a bye week, and then two more home games. So again, you get this nice chunk of not having to travel during the middle of the year, and the Seahawks will be home against the Cardinals and home against the Bucks. So that would be, like, this is feeling plausible to me. I think this feels more realistic than the first predicted schedule. Then you go back on the road after the Cardinals and Bucks at home. You go back on the road. Why is it? sorry, I got to figure out why it's not showing the rest of the schedule. There we go. Back on the road for week 10 when you play the Steelers. Again, it could be a Sunday night football game. And then you go on the road to the 49ers. I don't hate, like, these groupings of a shorter West Coast trip with a longer East Coast trip. Playing the Steelers and the 49ers back to back would be a challenging pair of road games to manage. Then you get... you get week 12 against the New Orleans Saints at home at the Carolina Panthers and home against the Rams. And this one's kind of nice because, again, you get one of those East Coast trips sandwiched between two home games. And the Saints are one of those home games, which you have to feel pretty good about your chances to win. The Panthers could be a team that you feel pretty good about your chances to win. And then coming home against the Rams for a Thursday night football game. So this is, again, a Thursday night game after a East Coast road trip. That's rough. And especially for it to be a divisional game, but they have done this kind of thing to the Seahawks in recent years. So then it finishes up with the Jags in week 15 at Jacksonville. Again, I think a late season game in Jacksonville would be good. And then you finish with two of your final three games on the road. You play the Vikings at home in week 16. Then you get the Commanders and the Rams back-to-back road. That would be a very rough end to the season. To end with back-to-back road games, with one of them being a East Coast road game against a quality team, and then you go to the Rams to finish the year, just like the Seahawks finished the year against the Rams in LA last year. I don't like the end. I don't like the end of how that would play out. And so overall, I like this schedule. Overall, I like this schedule, but that end would be very rough. Very rough, for sure. So again, that alternate schedule would be home against the Texans, away against the Cardinals, home against the 49ers, away against the Titans and Falcons in week 4 and 5, home against the Colts, bye week, home against the Cardinals and the Bucks, at the Steelers, at the 49ers, home against the Saints in week 12, at the Panthers in week 13, home against the Rams for Thursday night football week 14, at the Jacksonville Jaguars, then a finishing slate of home against the Vikings and at the Commanders and at the Rams. So granted, these are just for fun, you know, mock schedules, predicted schedules to kind of talk through. When you look at these games and you see them kind of in this light, I'm curious how you react. Like, are you like, man, this is going to be fun this year? Or do you think like, man, these games look boring? The part of me feels like there's some lack. The thing you get with some teams that you feel more confident you're going to beat is also a little bit lack of luster. I'm not that excited to watch them play the Colts. You know, the Panthers maybe a little bit. You know, the Saints, like, I wouldn't watch those teams unless I had to. So there's a little bit of that. The Jags, I'm not super interested in the Jags. So I get a little bit of, there's not the sparkly part of this schedule as much as last year, where there was just a lot of really top shelf elite franchises. At the same time, that means there's a chance to win games. And I think that could be really good. The amount of East Coast road trips makes this complicated and potentially really challenging. There could be some arduous aspects of the schedule as that comes out. And, you know, the Seahawks were an excellent road team last year. So, I mean, Mike McDonald was, I think, the first, I know he was the first Seahawks first year head coach to ever win his first 10 a.m. game, let alone his first two. I think he won his first three. Like, he did very well in 10 a.m. games. Some of that, like the Seahawks split between being a poor home team versus a good road team last year, also has to do with who they played and when they played those teams. Like, if they had played the Bills on the road instead of the Bills at home, I think you'd have a problem. They would have lost that game either place. I don't think it was because it was at home that they lost that game. And honestly, if they had played the Packers and the Vikings on the road, I think they would have lost those games. I don't think it mattered that those were home games. I don't think that was why they lost those games. So I don't know that you can put like, oh, this Mike McDonald's a great road coach. Like, I don't feel that way. I think there's some luck involved there and just how things fell. But I am curious to see, this is going to be a much more challenging road schedule in terms of logistics, not necessarily in terms of opponents. I think some of the things that are going to really swing this schedule are going to be how good the Jags are. How good, like the 49ers, I feel like are a wide variance team. They could be very good. They could be very bad. They won six games last year. I mean, we all think about them as the 49ers, and they still have Fred Warner and Nick Bosa and Trent Williams and Brock Purdy and Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle and like on and on, right? But they won six games last year. So while they could be very good, I think they also could be very bad. And it could be the same. They could be very good, very bad in the same season. The Seahawks faced them earlier on when they were playing very well last year and they got their butts kicked. They went down to San Francisco, Santa Clara, and beat them down there. So anyway, that's a high variance team. I think the Cardinals, to some extent, I wouldn't call them a high variance team. I think they're going to be better this year. I don't know how much better, and I think there's a lot of questions about whether the changes that they made on their defensive front seven are going to pay off, as well as their cornerback room. So if their defense ends up being a top 15 defense, that's a much different Cardinals team than the one that the Seahawks played last year. And then, like, I think the Bucs are a little bit of a wild card team. You don't know what they're going to be. The Falcons, certainly, I think they're going to be a good team. I think they're going to have a very powerful offense. The Seahawks destroyed the Falcons last year in Atlanta. I think with Michael Penix, I think with some of the other additions they made, they're going to be a better team this year. But who knows? They lost Grady Jarrett. Like, there's some changes there. They still might not be good enough on defense. I don't think the Colts are a high variance team. I just think they're not very good. Anthony Richardson can be a handful, but he also is a pretty bad quarterback. I mean, could Daniel Jones be back in Seattle in week six with the Colts? And God, it was so painful losing to Daniel Jones last year. God, I don't want to see that again. Is he the new Colt McCoy? I don't want to talk that into existence. The Steelers are an interesting team as well, right? Because Steelers have a really good defense. They have like some really good players on that side of the ball. They have a pretty good offensive line, a pretty decent run game. And then you've got like maybe Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, maybe Mason Rudolph, maybe Kirk Cousins. Like, we don't know who the Steelers are going to be yet or how they're going to look. That's going to be a really interesting one. And with, if you've got a bad quarterback, that's just, now granted, the Steelers came in to Seattle with Mason Rudolph a few years ago and humiliated Seattle in a game Seattle needed to win to get to the playoffs. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, they'll just go into Pittsburgh if Mason Rudolph's the quarterback and they'll win. I don't think that's the case, but they are a team that's a little hard to say exactly what they're going to be this year. The Vikings, similarly, I think the Vikings are really talented at pretty much every position other than there's just a huge question mark to me at quarterback. Everyone's just assuming that JJ McCarthy is going to come in and roll. I'm not. I did not like JJ McCarthy coming out of the draft. Take that for what it's worth, but I saw JJ McCarthy as having some of the similar challenges that, like, I saw him closer to like Jackson Dart in some ways, different style of offense that he operated in, but maybe like even a Quinn Ewers. Like, I saw some of that in JJ McCarthy's game, some really puzzling inaccuracy in specific parts of the field and specific throws. So I'm not as high on JJ McCarthy as the Vikings clearly are. But if he comes in and he struggles, then that that team could be much worse than what they were last year, even with the talent around him. So fun to kind of play around with it. Appreciate if you haven't already, give the show a like, click subscribe. We are charging towards 20,000 subscribers on YouTube. If you haven't already, make sure you click subscribe, join the crew. We're happy to have you. I see there's a couple super chats here. Let's get to those. Mr. Hester, Don Hester has gifted 5 more Hawk Blogger memberships. You can get one of these free memberships to the YouTube Hawk Blogger channel. All you got to do is turn on gifting on your YouTube account. If you don't know how to do that, do a quick Google search. It will show you how to do it. And then like the show, subscribe to the channel, do all the things, watch the show, comment. The more engaged you are with the channel, the more chances you have for YouTube to gift you one of these memberships. Thanks, Don, for doing that. Gingerbread Man says, did you get out to swing the clubs yesterday? If so, how did it go? It was fun talking with Jermaine Kearse yesterday. If you missed that show, make sure you go check that out. And I did go get a club fitting yesterday because my irons, you don't need to know all the details, but yes, I need to get new irons. It's time. And it went well. It actually went pretty well. And the salesperson was very smart. You know, I'm very humble about my golf game because I know I'm not that good at golf, but he just, was blowing a lot of sunshine. I'm sure that makes a lot of people happier to part with the money to buy a new set of clubs, but little did he know I was pretty much going to buy them regardless. But I'm going to try to get out in this gloomy weather a little bit later today. See if I can actually swing the club better. Also, talking with Jermaine about maybe doing a little bit of an event or something at the Evergreen Golf Club. I'm going to see if I can get some Seahawks there. Maybe we can make it a fundraiser or something. I don't know. I don't want to bite off more than I can chew, but it would be fun to do a show at one of the Evergreen Golf Clubs, show it off a little bit, and maybe we can get some folks there as well. So stay tuned for that. We'll see what can come from it. All right. So I want to debut a new segment. This is going to be a different topic entirely. Hard pivot, okay? And I don't know, like I'll need your feedback on it. On how much you want it, if you want to have this come back in its other forms. I'm titling this segment Seahawks ASMR. And it is not going to be me like putting my fingers on the microphone or making little sounds to help you go to sleep. It is going to be a positive, pleasant, optimistic meditation on what the Seahawks could be this year. Because you know what? Why not? Let's talk about what could be and not always worry about all the things that could go wrong. And the first place that I wanted to do this is on the Seahawks offensive line. And I feel this a little bit in my bones. And I can't get it out of my head that I feel like the Seahawks offensive line is going to be a lot better than what we are used to and what people are expecting. And so the way this is going to work, I'm going to walk you through why that could be the case. And it's up to you to decide for each one of these, whether you think it's realistic or not. And I'll share a little bit of content, but I will also, you know, make some predictions a little bit, some prognostications about how things could go. So in order to do that, we're going to start by looking at each player that I believe is going to be a starter for the offensive line. Let's talk about, in order for the Seahawks offensive line to be better, the first place to look is the players. And if you look at the Seahawks from last year, their offensive line was Charles Cross at left tackle. Charles Cross had an 82.5 overall grade as a left tackle last year, 81.3 pass block, 77.9 run block. That is before he was put in a wide zone scheme with Clint Kubiak and John Benton. And I'm going to talk about the John Benton effect in a second. If Charles Cross is just the player he was last year, I think the Seahawks are in a very good place. I think there's a real chance that Charles Cross is going to take a step forward, another meaningful step forward. And if he does that, if he really excels in this scheme with this coaching, watch out. You would have one of the best young left tackles in football if that happens. The next position next to Charles Cross was Laken Tomlinson. Laken Tomlinson was a 62 graded left guard. And as far as where that ranked among all guards in the NFL, Laken Tomlinson ranked 46th in the NFL at left guard. He was a 59 graded pass blocker and a 65 graded run blocker. Gray Zabel is going to be your starter at left guard. I'm telling you right now, Gray Zabel is going to be a better pass protector than Laken Tomlinson. I guarantee Gray Zabel will be a better pass protector than Laken Tomlinson. In fact, I think Gray Zabel is going to be a clearly above average pass protector. I think he's going to be close to 70 as a PFF grade in that regard. I think where he may not, like, run blocking is harder to do. It's harder to get right early on. He may be a lesser pass blocker, but I think that it is a very reasonable prediction that Gray Zabel is going to be a better left guard overall than Laken Tomlinson was last year. I would think a reasonable prediction for Gray Zabel is that he is in the upper 60s as a rookie guard. And that's being conservative, and I'll share some reasons why I think it's conservative. But a lot of rookie offensive linemen aren't their best. It's not their best season. Center. Center's an interesting one. As of right now, I'm going to stick with Olu Oluwatimi as the starter. Olu Oluwatimi had a 64 grade as a center last year. He only gave up 8 pressures in his 435 snaps. 8 pressures and 260 pass block snaps. So he was a pretty decent center last year. His run blocking grade was 66. His overall grade was 64. He was the 21st ranked center in the NFL. Wasn't great. Wasn't terrible. He was not a reason the team was losing games. I think that it's fair to expect the Seahawks are going to get at least that kind of performance going into this year. And keep in mind, they had to switch centers last year. So this is keeping stability, having somebody that they know that is smart, that knows the scheme, and is going to get the best coaching that hopefully he's gotten to this point. So I'm predicting kind of stability at the center spot. I think Jalen Sundell has upside over Olu. Jalen Sundell is a better athlete than Olu Oluwatimi. That's why he could potentially be a backup tackle last year and then be a center this year. I think his potential in this kind of scheme is really exciting. I also really like him next to Gray Zabel, who's a former teammate and roommate. But for now, I'm sticking with Olu Oluwatimi as the starter. Right guard, we'll come back to it, okay? Right tackle, Abe Lucas. Last year, you had 4 different players play right tackle for the Seahawks. Most of them were an absolute disaster. You had Stone Forsythe at 43 grade, play a number of games at tackle. You had Mike Jarrell, who was a rookie last year from Findlay College, play a couple of games, 46 graded player by PFF. You had George Fant play some time, not that many snaps, and he kept getting injured at tackle. And then you had Abe Lucas come in and stabilize things while he was playing largely on one foot in his recovery from his knee surgery. Abe Lucas has been working out all offseason. He is playing his most healthy self coming into this camp. And I believe he has every reason to think that he is going to be not only as good as he was as a rookie, which was around a 70 graded player as a rookie, but I think better. I think Abe Lucas could end up being a guy in the mid to high 70s, maybe even low 80s as a right tackle with his full health. And I think he is going to be an absolute road grader as a run blocker. So that leaves that right guard position. And you're talking about Satawa Lamea. You're talking about Anthony Bradford. You're talking about Christian Haynes, Bryce Cabledew. You just need one of those guys to be decent. They don't need to be great. They just need to be decent. I think it's very reasonable to expect that you can get a 60 graded, like a league average player out of that group of four. One of those guys will emerge. And that's just the personnel. But I think already, if you talk about the personnel, the Seahawks are in a much better position heading into this season than they were last year. Then you talk about the John Benton effect. And if you missed this show a while back, I'm going to go through and reshare it for you. I'm not going to go through it in every detail, but this is looking at how John Benton affected PFF grades for all the players, so many players on the Saints in his first year. This wasn't over multiple years. First year, Eric McCoy went from a 79 graded center to a 94 graded center. His pass blocking went from 59 to 89. His run blocking went from 89 to 95. All right. Those are massive swings. Cesar Ruiz, a guard, went from 51 to 67. His pass block grade went from 58 to 67. His run block grade went from 46 to 64. He took what was a very below average guard and made him a very above average guard. Trevor Penning went from a 53 graded player to a 60 graded player. His run blocking went from 49 to 70. And I see our troll who's trying to take this positive ASMR segment and shoot holes in it. That's not the point of this segment. And saying that Benton didn't have average guys, I'm showing you, if you think Cesar Ruiz and Trevor Penning and Shane Lemieux are not average guys, I don't know what to tell you. But even this guy, Shane Lemieux, who is not a great player and wasn't even a great player under Benton, he went from a 34 graded guy to a 51. His pass blocking went from 26 to 42. His run blocking went from 39 to 59. Those are huge jumps forward. Landon Young, another Jag, went from 49 to 55 as an overall player. His run blocking went from 51 to 68. The run blocking in particular is something that improves under Benton. Lucas Patrick, who we've talked about, journeyman, went from 50 to 65. His pass blocking went from 40 to 60. His run blocking went from 61 to 66. So you've got a number of these players who have made these jumps under Benton. And you take that, you take the fact that this was a offensive line that had to pass protect as much or more than any other team in the NFL while being injured, while being young. and while having a relatively inexperienced coach on the in the offensive line room. First time Scott Huff had been coaching in the NFL. Now you change that to a team that is going to run much more often. They're going to be less often in pass protection. They're going to have more play action, which also helps. They're going to have more under center, which is going to reduce the time that a defensive player is going to be able to guess pass right off the snap. They're going to have to delay a little bit. There's a number of factors here, which for me lead me to believe that this is a there's a real solid case to be made that the offensive line will take a step forward. I, of course, would have liked to have had a veteran in there that was a more reliable prediction to make. The Seahawks wanted that too. They didn't get it. I think Gray Zabel's the next best thing. And ultimately, over the next few years, might be the best thing. So that is your positive meditation for today about the Seahawks. It is not a guarantee of what's going to happen, but it is an imagining of if some predictable, probable things happen, the Seahawks could be on the positive side of variance and on the positive side of predictions. So you guys each have an opportunity to say, do you think Charles Cross is going to be better or worse in this situation? Do you think Gray Zabel is going to be better or worse than Laken Tomlinson? Do you think Oluwatimi is going to be essentially the same guy he was last year? Do you think that the right guard position, is it going to be worse than last year? Is it going to be the same? Is it going to be better? And then right tackle, do you think that the right tackle position is going to be better, the same, or worse than last year? Keep in mind, Abe Lucas was out for most of that season and playing on one foot essentially when he came back. I feel like it's very probable that four of those five things become true. Cross, Zabel being better than Tomlinson, Olu being no worse than he was last year, and Abe Lucas being better than the right tackles that they had last year. I think the right guard position is a wild card. I don't think we're going to know. But given what we've seen, what I just showed you from what John Benton has done, I think the likelihood that that guy, whoever it is going to be at least a serviceable NFL offensive lineman, I think is reasonably high. I think that you could make the case for Christian Haynes, Satawa Lamea, even Bryce Cabledew. I really like Bryce Cabledew. We'll see how much noise he makes when the pads comes on, but I really like him. I think there's a real case to be made that one of those guys is going to be a better solution at right guard than Anthony Bradford was for much of last year. So I don't feel like this is a huge stretch. I also don't think it's a huge stretch to say John Benton could have a real positive impact on those guys and that the scheme will have a real positive impact. So first is just personnel. I think there's reason to think four out of the five will at least be as good or better than they were. Well, I think that there's reason to believe that three of the five will be better than they were. And then you've got the scheme and the coaching. And I think that there's reasons to think that that's going to elevate this group much more than anyone else is expecting. All right, folks. I see someone in chat saying, not everyone who doesn't agree with some arguments being made is a troll. That's not the case. I think my reaction to the troll stuff is one, that account almost always says something negative, no matter what. So that's just how that person has chosen to present themselves. They're welcome to be here. But when I introduce a segment as an ASMR positive meditation, you know, and it's immediately shooting holes in all the reasons, that's trolling. Like, that's just what that is. That's not disagreeing. That's just, you know, having an intentionally oppositional perspective. So I'm going to call it what it is. Of course, people have every opportunity to think whatever they want to think about this team, about the players. That's the fun of this. Like, you can endlessly debate this and it's harmless to have different opinions. So I will always welcome people to have different opinions. All right, folks, if you haven't already given the show a like and click subscribe, please do. I would greatly appreciate it. If you haven't headed over to JK Boots recently, use code HawkBlogger, gets you $75 off the best boots you're ever going to own. And $15 will go to the Wildland Firefighters Foundation. If you haven't heard, there is less in the budget this year in Washington State for forest firefighters. They need all the protection they can get. By using this code HawkBlogger to get yourself a pair of boots, get $75 off. Also help contribute $15 to the Wildland Firefighters Foundation. Make sure that our Northwest forest firefighters are well equipped to protect our forest and keep the Pacific Northwest gorgeous. So a great deal all around. Make sure you take advantage of it while it's still live, okay? All right, folks, this has been another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. We will be back tomorrow with both a double pod Wednesday. We will get some information about the schedule. Some predictions will start coming out. We'll get a little bit more detail. And then tomorrow night, Evan Hill and Jeff Simmons will be with me as we react to the actual Seahawks schedule. It'll be fun. We will see you then. Take care. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.